ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover, author of How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from guests from various ministry contexts, having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about. No topic is off limits. Today, my guests are James and Desiree Westbrook. The Westbrooks planted a biblically faithful, Jesus-centered, multi-ethnic, multi-generational, and multi-socioeconomic church plant in one of the least reached areas of the United States, that is, the San Francisco Bay Area, where less than 3% of nearly 8 million people are evangelical Christians. The Westbrooks know a thing or two about spiritual warfare, as the enemy does not want a thriving church plant in Oakland, California. I asked the Westbrooks to share about their experience with spiritual warfare today, as well as stories of victory and ways that we too can overcome when we experience spiritual warfare in our ministry. Here, friends, is my conversation with James and Desiree Westbrook. I am so excited today to get to welcome James and Desiree Westbrook. Hi, Westbrooks.
Hi, how's it going, Christine? Good to see. Good to be with you.
I'm excited to get to talk to y'all today. I've gotten to know Desiree a little bit, but I'm excited to get to have both of you together and to pick your brains. We're going to talk about spiritual warfare, but first, I'd just love for y'all to introduce yourselves and tell my audience about you and your ministry context.
Well, thank you so much for having us, Christine. My name is Desiree. And my husband is?
James. I am James Westbrook. Yeah.
And we've been married, I think next year will be 20 years.
Wait, You think? Uh-oh. Yeah, I would have gotten in trouble for that one.
No, I have a four-month-old, so my sleep is just... But yes, next year will be 20 years. And we've been together since high school. We have three little ones. One is 10, one is 12. So our son is 10, our daughter's 12. And then we have a four-month-old. And all of them have just been amazing.
And for the record, it was intentional.
That's right.
Yes.
And so we're so excited. We serve in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we have a church plant in Oakland called Realm Church. So that we've been serving at since 2019. Has over 15 different ethnic groups there, and it's been thriving. The nations are here, and so even though we've been in the trenches, we definitely are beginning to see a lot of God's grace in that, with your encouragement and so many prayers across the nation and the world, really. So,
yeah. And also, just for context, we're literally right south, about a mile south of Berkeley. Yeah, and if, you know, most of us have heard of Berkeley, but University of California, Berkeley. So
yeah, for sure. Okay, so Kyle, my husband, and I got to spend some time in Oakland a while back, and when we were there long enough to visit churches. This was before y'all were there, but we got to visit churches, and man, we had a hard time finding a church first of all to visit. We realized this is culturally very, very different than any place we had ever been. And we got to be there long enough to kind of experience it. So I want to hear y'all's perspective. You've been there how long now?
Over 5 years now. I think 5.5 years now. But we've been back for 5.5 years. I completed seminary. I was at first at Southern Seminary and working there. And then I came out to lead recruitment for Gateway Seminary, Golden Gate then. And that was, we spent about 2.5 years there too. So about 8 years total.
Okay. So tell us from now you've been there for that long of time, what is your perspective? And tell us about the cultural context in which you're ministering.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that we're definitely not in Kansas anymore, right? And I'm a Missourian, so I think I can say that because it's a neighboring state. Yeah, it's a really a different place. And so it's what one would call a global city because you have, one, it's a gateway port city to the rest of the world, at least to the east. But you have so much diversity here. So much the great percentage of foreign-born folks here, and I would say that the stats go that it is less than 3% evangelical presence, and you know that because part of some of the differences I think between where I was coming from and going into this place in terms of the ministry context is that I'm used to seeing symbols of faith, symbols of my faith back east. You got church signs. You got you have churches. you have I don't know, maybe a politician of a particular persuasion, a color rather, red, blue. Here, and not to try to not to equate that with Christianity, but the point is that there's all these symbols that people typically find great comfort in when they know that somehow God is in control. But God is always in control, no matter what context we're in. But I would say that sometimes we have to reprogram how to think about that and making sure we understand that no matter what symbols or lack of symbols we have in terms of faith, of Christianity, of, you know, maybe of political persuasion, whatever the case may be, God is still in control. God is still active in that place, but it's really different. And we've learned how to, I guess, navigate those differences, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. What have, Desiree, I'd love to know from you, what have been the biggest challenges in planting a church there for y'all?
I think when James graduated from seminary, we knew that it was less than 3% Christian out of nearly 8 million people. And we actually get excited and still get excited about sharing the gospel with people from all over the world here. And so we were prepared for all the different worldviews, all the different ideologies, things like that. I think the most challenging has been the spiritual warfare, I think, here. The amount of it, because the enemy is really not wanting to give an inch to any gospel preaching church in the Bay Area. And so it's been, you know, encouraging to see that Realm and a few other churches continue by God's grace to preach the gospel. But it's also challenging to see so many churches yield to the demonic forces and begin to change their message, change the gospel. There's one church here that changed and started preaching through the Zodiac, saying that God loves you so much that he knows your sign. And he created that sign so that you could know him. And so there's a lot of weird stuff going on in Oakland, Berkeley,
San Francisco.
Yeah. And so we're just seeing that continuing to rise as people try to pivot to figure out how to get people in the door.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's really, and because we won't shift on the gospel, we are finding that people are finding Realm as a refuge. And so for that, we're thankful. But with that also comes spiritual warfare.
So, mm-hmm. So yeah. Let's talk about that, because I would imagine the spiritual warfare has been intense. And so it's very overt. You know, sometimes I think we have a hard time as Christians being able to name that that's what's happening. And maybe you've had that same, you know, you don't know how to name that, but I'm sure you've learned over the years that that is what's happening. And so I would love to, first of all, for you guys just to define what is spiritual warfare. How do we think about what it is, what it looks like?
Yeah. I think that we agree with this definition. It resonated with us very well that, spiritual warfare essentially is anything that is devised by what Ephesians 1, what Paul says, Ephesians 6, rather, anything devised by the evil one aimed to bring about these three things: derailment, which has to do with spiritual focus, discouragement, which has to do with our spiritual health, our destruction, which has to do with this idea of spiritual endurance, enduring to the end. And destruction is a word that means that there's no trace of anything left. He utterly seeks to destroy any witness of the church, any witness of our Christ. And so that helps to broaden for us how to anticipate or how to recognize when it comes. It broadens the definition, because anytime we are experiencing derailment in terms of spiritual focus, when we came out here, there was a great demand for us to match our message up with whatever was being preached on the outside. And so if there is social upheaval, then there should be some type of matching up or some type of syncretism of what the world think is the solution. They should be able to hear that and recognize that on Sunday mornings, which we, of course, disagree with. Sometimes they're going to overlap, but we take our cues, our spiritual focus. It comes from the scriptures. It comes from our Lord. And so we said that, hey, this is a technique, or this is a planned device from the enemy to try to derail us and try to take our spiritual focus off of what we are supposed to be proclaiming, which is this unfiltered and loving gospel. And then also just discouragement and spiritual health. There's a lot that happens in this ministry context. People leaving, people rejecting you. Or you developed such a great relationship with people in your church, they love you, and then you have to have this hard conversation that they may disagree with, and you don't know how they're going to take it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we've had situations where we were able to baptize people that were coming from a different perspective, and they came into the light of Christ's understanding. But we also had situations that where people left. And it's interesting how they leave us in the Bay Area. They say, you guys are so loving. I say, thank you. But we disagree on this issue, and they leave. And sometimes, to be honest, I mean, that doesn't always feel like roses and feel it's discouraging. And the enemy wants to replay back in your mind that you did something wrong.
Yeah.
Or maybe you made too much of a big deal out of that. Or maybe you could have just been quiet and had them a little longer. And he tries to bring about discouragement, which affects obviously spiritual health. And then also, obviously, that last one was destruction, spiritual endurance. Why are you even doing this? You wanted to have 500 people by now, you know, and so you're not there yet. Why are you doing this? And but we have all these reminders of God's grace evidence through people being baptized, coming to know the Lord, people in community groups, people saying that, hey, I preached the gospel on my job or my campus. So we think it's anything that's going to try to bring about those three things. And the enemy is shifty and he's crafty.
That's very helpful, though, to be able to put it in those categories, because when you say that, I'm like, oh, I've experienced those things, especially the, you know, in every way. But what comes to mind, the destruction is just, I just want to quit. I just want to quit. I can't do this. It's too hard. And that's, dealt with that. Yeah. I've dealt with all of them. I would love for you to speak specifically. You gave us great examples of how you've experienced this, but I think about Oakland as being a very pivotal city in terms of talking about race. And so when you say that you have people who are coming in saying, I want you to speak to these issues, it just makes me think about y'all in 2020 and how did you navigate those things, and what would you label spiritual warfare? And and I would just love for you to kind of share about that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I will go back to that derailment one, that spiritual focus. It's the enemy would love for the believer to believe that they are proclaiming God's words the same way he did in the garden, with doing a little remix. He would love for us to believe that we are proclaiming God's truth when we're actually not. And he does that through that derailment of spiritual focus of, this is what the word says, and this is what I'm going to say, because the word says this. And race was a huge thing. We all come into the church with some type of context of race relations, whether that's negative, positive, prejudice, misunderstanding, stereotypes, whatever that is. And we say that, hey, when you come into the Lord's church, we want this to be a safe space for you to be able to come in wherever you are. But the Lord loves us, that he meets us where we are, but he loves us enough not to keep us where he found us. And so that means that we get to have these robust conversations and faithful conversations that will hopefully end up with a Christ thought about a thing versus a worldly philosophy about a thing. How would you add to that, Desiree, in terms of how we've kind of navigated those race relations?
Yeah, so we've always believed we've been doing cross-cultural missions-oriented ministry for the last 20 years. We accepted that calling. And so when we planted Realm Church. We went in with an Ephesians 3 mindset of all nations, trying to reach all nations. And so by that time, when 2020 happened, Realm had already had multiple different ethnic groups. We had Asian people of different Asian backgrounds. We had Africans. We have, and we still have, people of different ethnicities. So when 2020 happened, we needed to pull in not just the conversation between people of African descent and people of European descent. We also had to consider and wanted to consider our Asian brothers and sisters and other ethnic groups that were asking us questions, some understood and some from different generations, that said, please help us understand. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And so, like James said, it was very important for us to have a Christological and continue to have a Christological focus, because out here, what we're seeing is that when the term social justice is used, especially being in Oakland, people often seem to assume that you mean that you're affirming. And so we've had to very intentionally use the term biblical justice, right? Because okay. we believe that God's people are going to serve the orphan, the widow, the foreigner, you know, the groups that God has called yeah. us to serve. And so Realm was already doing that. And so when 2020 happened, our people knew from the outset that we needed to address this in a Christological way. And so we had discussions with different ethnic groups about what was going on, but yeah. we always pointed it back to how does Jesus want us to treat the immigrant? How does Jesus want us to treat our neighbor, even if we disagree with one another? Yeah. So lastly, I'll say we do have people from multiple political persuasions in our church. And, you know, they had to sit at the table and figure out, how do I love this person that thinks very different from me in their socioeconomic status, in their generational status, in their ethnic status? And so through that, we've been able to have discussions that have garnered a little more compassion and empathy for one another. And we're continuing to grow in that. Mm-hmm. But by God's grace, God really helped us through 2020 mm-hmm. with love and understanding mm-hmm. different people's perspectives. Mm-hmm. So.
That's great.
And let me see. I was just say add one more thing to that regard. That's a huge matter of spiritual warfare. The enemy is going to work with the thing that maybe is sometimes closest to us, even an identity marker for many of us, even to the point of idolatry, our culture, our ethnic background. But I want to remind us that this was the first conflict that the church faced. Right. In the book of Acts, chapter 6, you have the establishment of deacons coming about because of ethnic tension between mm-hmm. the Hellenist Jews and the Hebrew speaking Jews. And it's always been a part of the church's history. I mean, it's not a coincidence, I guess, that, you know, Paul is correcting Peter about his biases or ethnic biases when it comes to, you know, the book of Galatians. And he confronts Peter to his face for our good, that we may be able to read it and understand that this is something that's going to always be an issue. And the enemies will always try to use ethnicity as a weapon to divide God's church.
Yes.
And right, understandably so. Let me just get, if I were in his shoes, I would use it as well. Because in Ephesians 3, you have this revelation that is made, put on display. The church is this manifold wisdom. It's the bouquet of flowers put on display for the world to see what God's intent was that was in previous generations concealed. So when the enemy sees this and when the world sees this, this multifaceted, this church that is beautiful, colored, and then yes, of course you will want to attack that. And I tell people that, listen, if we are dealing with issues of ethnic tensions in our church and cultural tensions in our church, it doesn't mean that we're doing something wrong. It likely means that we're doing something right, because the enemy is always active in this particular area. And sometimes even we had to take L's or losses when we had to address issues that culturally our people would say that are according to the flesh, as Paul would say that, yo, you're not with us if you're going to defend, say, Asians being attacked by predominantly black and brown people. And we said that, hey, you know, we don't want to get caught up in terminology as like, well, is this racism? Is this? And based off of these cultural definitions. But what we are going to say is that this is wrong.
Yeah.
And we're going to, and we have brothers and sisters in our church that are asking questions to an African-American pastor. Hey, are you cool with this? And I have to make sure I'm ready and boldly able to say that, no, I'm not. The Lord is not. And vice versa, whether it's African-American, of European descent, whatever the case is, we have to be able to take a stand. And And every Sunday, I know I'm doing my job right when somebody's getting upset.
Especially preaching the gospel unadulterated.
That's about right, right there. Oh, yeah. Well, how are there times, for me, there are times where I forget so quickly and so easily that the Bible tells me that I am not fighting against flesh and blood, that there are spiritual principalities and powers at play. And so I wonder for you if it's difficult for you to remember that sometimes, but how do you, or if not, how do you keep that at the front of your mind?
Honestly, because it's happened so much here, it kind of comes with the territory every day. I mean, when we pull out of our driveway, we're probably the only ones, and we engage
on Sundays,
right? On Sundays. And so it's really at the forefront of our minds now. It was surprising at the front end, but now we live with expecting the spiritual warfare and the attacks. And as I talk with you, even last July and ongoing, we're continuing to realize, wow, this really is spiritual, because certain things happen and you're just like, why is this happening to us? We would look for, we would try, in the beginning, we tried to find buildings. We were being asked questions like, do you believe in marriage between one man and one woman? And they were giving us these litmus tests. And we have a lot of friends to this day that are meeting in schools. Some, their principal is fine with it. And some, their principals are trying to get them out of the schools. So it's an ongoing spiritual warfare, because most of the messaging that we get here is that you're not wanted. But the thing that encourages us, though, is that the gates of hell will not prevail against God's church. And we really do have brothers and sisters like you and others praying for us, encouraging us, and also living in the reality that God sees, God hears, and God knows, and God is still calling people out of the darkness here. We have people at Google, at Facebook, at Netflix, at Warner Brothers, just so many different tech companies here that attend our church and other churches in the Bay Area that are gospel preaching churches, that are going and taking that gospel to their workplaces, to people that may not ever darken a door. And so on Sundays, yes, some people may not have the biggest amount of people in their churches, but you do know that most gospel preaching, or many gospel preaching pastors and churches, are equipping their people to go and evangelize the people at these tech companies, because whether people like it or not, the Bay Area is in our homes. It's in our homes through Netflix. It's in our homes through Twitter, and just so many are now formerly called Twitter, now called X, right? Like Facebook, Instagram. And so this place is not forgotten. God still has people here. And so we gather with other Christians here as well, other gospel preaching Christians. Though we may be few in number, there are still some of us here. And so we draw strength from one another. And then also with you all, people, our friends and brothers and sisters in our other parts of the country and around the world who are preaching the gospel. We listen to you all. We draw strength from you all, and you all pray for us, and that helps us here.
And I would say that this is a hard one. It's a hard one because our natural default is to believe that the thing that's most immediately in front of us is the real thing. It is the and it's the ultimate thing. I think this is why Paul, he always puts emphasis when he's talking about spiritual warfare on this idea of remembering. Like, remember that that's not the the ultimate warfare. Is directly what's in front of you. It's what's behind what's in front of you. He tells us to be alert or to be ready. That language is riddled in Ephesians chapter 6. And I have to say that I think that when it comes to times, the seasons of where I feel like I'm performing for my own, I guess, self-gratification in terms of, there's a correlation that I make between performance and favor. God's favor means that I'm performing performing well, or I'm doing well. That right there, it's so easy for the enemy to come in the midst of that space, or that poor perspective or wrong perspective, And I just begin to believe that the thing is about, I didn't preach, I preached too long, or maybe I preached too short, or maybe we didn't greet enough, or maybe my team is, it becomes the physical thing. Or even just when our perspective is off, you know, I was reading just real quick. Reading Matthew 20. We were doing devotion on that, and looking at Matthew 20, you have the famous story of James and John's mother asking to sit on Jesus' right and left side, and it made other people livid, rightfully so. But Jesus says that, listen, can you drink my cup? And they say, yeah, we got it, we can do it, sure. It's like, oh, you think you will, but let me assure you that you will drink from my cup. But they didn't quite understand. It's so powerful. Perspective is so powerful when it comes to this. And then we have to constantly be reminded, especially in this context, but I think it's in any context, that there is a correlation between suffering and service that leads to greatness in the kingdom of God. And mm-hmm. so when we are going through seasons where it's difficult, the temptation, once again, is to say it's because of this, that, and we're talking about all physical things that we can see most immediately.
Yeah.
But really what it is, there's something behind it. And perspective tells us that, as a matter of fact, you should expect suffering and service if you're going to be considered great in the kingdom. And so perspective has to be there. And then lastly, I would say that when we're persecuted, it's so easy to say that it's because, once again, because of something fleshy. But we know that that's because of spiritual warfare.
Mm-hmm.
When we first got here, someone protested us, plastered my face all over the internet. I'm saying, I knew that eventually I would be protested for saying the truth on something, but I hadn't even planned the church yet. You know?
Yeah, it was June 2018.
We just wanted to move into this building. And the general contractor caught wind that we wanted to be in this particular building, and they said, no, not these guys, and protested. Mm. I ended up meeting with this person after praying. Like, I have to remember, because I wanted to take that so personal.
Yeah.
Like, bro, I'm going back to St. Louis in my mind. Like, you don't just, you know, give me a chance. And, you stereotype me, all this other stuff. I'm like, wait a minute. This is totally a scheme of the enemy, which means that it affects the solution and how I'm going to actually resolve this or address it.
Yes.
So when I saw that it was the enemy behind it, we immediately went to prayer, but I actually reached out to the guy and said that this is still a soul that the Lord could have purpose to be in his kingdom. So let me reach out to him and then let's see if he wants to talk. And guess what? He wanted to talk. So we talked and we walked around what we have this huge natural lake in the middle of Oakland. It's beautiful. It's not what people think when they think about Oakland, but it's absolutely beautiful. And then we walked around there for over an hour. And he said, do you believe this? What's on this paper? He was shaking. He was nervous. I don't know what he was expecting. But I said, hey, brother, I'll get there. We'll talk about everything that's on that paper that you printed out about what I believe. But I believe that each one of us, we come to this place right now in this moment in history with stories. I want you to know who you're talking to, and I want to know who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
We begin to investigate story, and I begin to understand some of the visceral reaction to what he was seeing online. And I was able to affirm every single thing he saw that he printed on the paper by the end of that conversation. But with that, he was able to see a person in front of him in the Imago Dei with reasoning and logic and understanding as to why I came to the conclusion in terms of God's revelation. And I asked him at the end, he was a part of the LGBTQ community. I said, do you believe that I hate you? And I've had to ask this question several times since I've been here. And his shoulders are tense. He lets out the pressure and he relaxes his shoulder. He says, no. He says, you're literally oozing with love. His words. We hugged. I said, we survived the walk. He says, I'm so sorry that I had that reaction. He says that I need to do some digging on my own story, as you've already pointed out, James, in this conversation. And I need to figure out, he says, can you please come to the building that I'm a general contractor for? Can you build your church in this building? I want to help you build it. And this is a brother that the Lord was able to work in his life. But if I had just baited about flesh, I would have gone to Desiree's lawyer's friend, since she's in the legal field, been so for 20 years. We would have sued them for discrimination on a protected ground, religious rights. And then we could have just moved forward with that. And they offered it and said, no, this is not the war. That's not the way to go. It takes wisdom to know when to go that direction, but that's not the way to go right now. And so, amazing. Yeah, those are examples. Yeah.
That's great. And y'all have kind of alluded, thank you for sharing that. That's a great example. And you've alluded to different things that you've turned to when you recognize spiritual warfare. Desiree talked about gathering together as the church, and you've talked about prayer, going to prayer. So I'd love for you to kind of unpack some of those tools that you turn to when you recognize I'm not fighting a battle against flesh and blood. This is spiritual warfare. What are things that you do both individually or as a couple to engage that well?
Well, one of the things I know that we do as a couple is we do listen to biblical books just working on our marriage, like books that we find encouraging. I don't necessarily know if I should I name any?
You can if you want, you can.
Well, one that has been encouraging to us so far, and there's so many, is The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller. There's a revised edition that we just recently went through with some of the people at our church. Again, you know, some of them were just like shocked at the definition of marriage, the definition of like, how do you interact? We're getting a lot of questions about gender roles in marriage and things like that. And so just simple, basic things, you know, that we kind of came knowing where God's given us opportunities to share some of those with others. But going, listening to books together, I also...
Even stories. I mean, even novels and...
Oh, yeah, Lord of the Rings. We love Lord
fantasies.
Of the Rings.
Fantasies. Oh, man.
he's a huge Lord of the Rings person. Yeah,
that's good spiritual
health.
And
I've joined him on that journey. We have Lord of the Rings decorations in our restroom. And he has... Lord of the Rings ring on.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Yeah, we had a Lord of the Rings baby shower. So we love doing fantasy, listening to certain encouraging, uplifting fantasy novels together and also with our children. And then we also listen to other sermons too, from other Bible preaching churches. It just is so encouraging, refreshing to hear sermons that reinforce things. And then we listen to you and other women who give us encouragement as well about, you know, how to live godly, how to continue to preach the gospel in your context, even to other women. Mm. And so those are some of the ways that we do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also getting rest, trying to get rest when we can.
How
and
many
taking
times?
Our Sabbath and break when we can too. We had to learn that the hard way.
Yes,
so,
us too.
How many times have we told people that came to us and maybe struggling in their marriage in the season, after they go back and forth over the small things, that's like, hey, that's just maintenance. I can't referee all that, you know. How many times have you said that, hey, how much sleep are you getting?
Right.
Because spiritual warfare happens in rest as well. And the enemy would want nothing more than to attack us in that area. It's a gift that the Lord gave to the church. And there are seasons like right now that, you know, where we have a new baby. And we're doing ministry where, you know, that annoyance meter can be set off pretty easily.
Yeah.
You know, and the competition for who's more tired. And, okay, my wife wins that every time.
Yeah.
I'm learning. Okay.
I'm learning. By the third child, you finally learned.
By the third child, yeah. Yeah. See, I forgot after 10 years. But
he also gets up in the middle of the night and he does a lot, too.
But I'm not doing it every other, you know, but the point is that remembering that rest is important. And when we're not getting rest, I have to make sure I rally the troops and rally the kids and say that, hey, mom is actually taking the biggest brunt of this. Because she's the only one that can give the baby what the baby needs right now when nursing and even comfort nursing that comes with that. And so part of that spiritual warfare is making sure that if mom is really tired, making sure that we give her enough grace to be able to navigate the day as she needs to relationally with us as she's trying to get that rest. You know?
Yeah, that's great.
And also, I would say, too, one more thing. Oh, can I say?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was also going to say, too, also knowing our limits and our limitations and not being afraid to reach out for help. I've talked to you, Christine, and I have other women, godly women in my life that are like, hey, is my meter off? Am I taking on too much on my plate? And you all have been able to encourage me and exhort me. And so just having other godly women or godly people in your lives that can help you with figuring out boundaries and limitations and not being afraid to walk in those in different seasons. They may look different in different seasons, as you all have encouraged me. And so with a newborn now, my limitations are a little different. And embracing that and saying, you know what, I am discipling my children, but I'm also, you know, going to have to, you know, disciple other women, but it's going to look differently in this season.
Yeah.
And being okay with that. So
that's helpful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking for women who are listening, who are maybe preparing to church plant. I remember in that time, people would say, it's going to be hard. And, you know, your marriage is going to be hard on your marriage. It's going to be hard. And there's spiritual warfare. And I was like, okay, how do I prepare for that? So what would you say, and this will be my final question, how can listeners be prepared? And it doesn't just have to be church plant or preparing a church plant, but how can we be ready? How can we be prepared to acknowledge that that's what's happening and to wrestle well when it comes?
Well, I'll say them short on this. I actually get this from Desiree from Scripture, but Desiree, she does so well in this area. I say that, listen, I think that mom and dad, or if it's a parent, husband and wife, they have to go into alert mode, into protection mode. And I don't say that to scare them. I go say that to help to say, be ready.
Yeah.
The enemy would want nothing more than to divide and conquer, to bring about discouragement, which that's actually the point of Ephesians 6. Look how many readiness type of the readiness type of language, be on guard, be alert, be ready. Paul is using all this language because he wants you to be ready for what will come. Not if it comes, it will come.
Yeah.
And the enemy wants nothing more than to bring about destruction to a marriage, because to thwart that is to bring about a derailing of ministry, focus, of credibility. And so they attack the marriage first. So I say that be ready, be on guard. And Desiree, the Scripture uses language to pastors that you are the watchman of people's souls. What beautiful language, what that great handle. I think for my wife and myself, I see Desiree, you know, she's like the beautiful hawk or the beautiful eagle. She has eyes and she's looking and she's watchful for anything coming against us. And whether it's my schedule, whether it's that person that means me harm or means us harm, whether it's that woman that is seeking to get between us, whatever it is. And so I trust my wife. So I'm going to just say to husbands, the ladies, please, I mean, let me give you permission to the husbands, listen to your wives.
Yeah.
They are wise and God's given them to you for your good and also for your protection. That's the best, I don't want to say tool. That seems weird. It seems a bit divine. But the best gift. Thank you.
We know,
ladies. It's the best gift that the Lord is going to give to the to that husband for ministry and for personal protection.
That's great. Awesome.
Yes. And I would second that. Thank you, James. Yes, just being okay with fostering that communication in our homes of lovingly, gently, when possible, saying, hey, this schedule this week is a little heavy. And we had to grow in that. We had to grow in honoring each other's boundaries and seeing what was healthy in our family and saying, wow, when this day is heavy, we're coming home and we don't have words for each other, and knowing that that's okay. But then saying, well, we can't keep going on this way. So we have to figure out what we're going to cut out. And so praying for wisdom, again, inviting other Christians in on your church planning journey that you can trust, that you can be vulnerable and honest with, to say, hey, are we off in this? How did you experience this? And also leaving the results up to the Lord, saying, Lord, this is your plant. We're here to share the gospel. Ultimately, our rewards are in heaven, whether or not we see the numerical growth we want or, you know, some will see it in this life and some won't. But trusting that the Lord is going to reward and honor that work and continuing to reach out for help when you need it. It's just been amazing and keeping that temperature on our marriage. And then we have children, checking in with them and seeing how they're doing too with everything. And then trying to honor their boundaries as well.
That's so great. Well, this has been so helpful. I've loved it. This is one thing I love. I love in the background we can hear James flipping through his Bible, ready. He's ready to preach to us.
Sorry.
No, I love that. I love that. I love when the pastor comes out and is teaching us. And then I love Desiree's heart and knowing her. She prays. She's a prayer warrior. So I'm thankful that y'all are there doing what you're doing. And I just want to say, keep going. And I know listeners are rooting y'all on. And I would just ask listeners to stop and to pray for the Westbrooks right now, just praying for them as they continue their work there in the Oakland area. So thank you so much, James and Desiree, for joining me.
Well, thanks for having us on. I appreciate it. Been great.
Love you.
Thanks for listening to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. I would love to hear from you. We are creating an episode full of our listeners' funniest or most embarrassing moments in ministry. Record and send your story to me at the link in the show notes. And don't forget, if you found this content helpful, please rate and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.